Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hello, Giants fans, and welcome to a new edition of the Valentine's Views podcast here on Big Blue View Radio, part of your SB Nation family of podcasts. I'm your host, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View. The Giants are or were originally scheduled to have rookies, quarterbacks, and injured players begin to report to East Rutherford, New Jersey for the first round of COVID-19 testing on Thursday, with camps originally scheduled to open next week, July 28th. Right now, we don't know exactly how all of that's going to work. You know, reports are that there are still some questions about that. And here to help us iron out everything that's going on with the opening of training camps around the league and with the New York Giants is longtime NFL columnist Bob Glover. Bob, how you doing? And I know you hate it every time I use that longtime phrase. I'm sorry.
No, I appreciate that, Ed. That's just like, you know, old. You can substitute that. It's fine. That's our thing.
Well, I don't want to do. You know, I have a birthday coming up next month, Bob, and I hate to tell you which one it is because it's a milestone one and it has a six in it. And
whoa,
yeah,
whoa, yep. Nice,
yep,
hello, welcome.
So I played golf earlier this week, and the pro out in the clubhouse said, are you a senior citizen yet? And because he's been asking me this for years, and I said a couple weeks from now. And he said, oh, wow. We'll throw you a party. And he said, you know, he said, when you get to 90, you can play out here for free.
Well, you know, there's a good motivation right there.
There you go. Amazingly, he said he's got a half dozen people who are 90 plus who actually play out there. So that's pretty cool.
That's incredible. That's great.
Yeah. So, we're both old and we know it, and that's just what it is.
But here's the thing. Here's my thing, Ed. I am completely immature and juvenile. So that helps me stay young at heart. So
I'll speak for yourself.
You've been around me in the press room. You hear that juvenile behavior and see it. So it's okay.
Yeah. Speak for yourself, Bob. I'm a completely mature, responsible adult.
You are. Compared to anyone.
All right. Sure, I am. I'll just ask my. I just won't invite my wife on the show. All right. So let's talk Giants. Let's talk NFL. Let's talk COVID-19. The last we heard was that it looks like there's some questions as to whether or not the Giants and the Jets and all of that are actually going to have rookies, quote-unquote, report for training camp on Thursday. And report is sort of a relative term because my understanding is that it's sort of a drive-through, you know, first round of COVID-19 testing. It's not really reporting for camp. So just, you know, as we do this, and I'll let people know we're recording on Wednesday for our Thursday show, so things may change a little bit between now and when the show actually airs. So just let us know, Bob, you know, from your perspective, where we stand on players beginning to report to facilities.
Well, it, you know, it's been a very complicated, long process that really goes back to January when the two sides, labor and, you know, the NFL Players Association and the NFL basically got serious about a new contract extension of the CBA, which was eventually passed in March. So that's the good news, is that they're going from a place of stability in terms of labor relations, but they had to iron out a lot of the nitty gritty details of how to actually move forward in a COVID-19 environment. So, you know, just on Monday night is when they agreed to all the testing protocols, and some teams were ready to report. The Jets, for instance, they had their rookies set to report on Tuesday, but they held off on that because of what you said. It's just a first test that you take. You have to take two tests, and then you have to quarantine for a period of time before they let you in the building. So this is going to be a gradual ramp-up process in terms of not only reporting, but in terms of actual training. So normally this time of year, you get ready, the players report on one day, the next day they're back on the, they're on the field, they're in pads, and they're, you know, they're going at it. But this is going to be a totally different world. There will be this extended ramp up period where both sides agree that the players need time to get into football ready shape. And so this is, again, this is uncharted territory. They're trying the best they can. They have the experience, Ed, of the 2011 lockout where players did not report for the entire offseason, and there were a lot more injuries that year. So that there's concern there, and I'm sure that the injury rate's going to be significantly higher this year than previous years. So they got to be careful, and they got to get the players ready to be in football shape. So it's going to be a very gradual, unorthodox procedure from here on out.
Bob, you mentioned the ramp up, and that at this point, as far as I know, is still one of the remaining unanswered questions. And what that leads me to is, I know you were on a call the other day with Demora Smith and J.C. Treader from the NFL Players Association, but what this leads me to is, at this point, are you satisfied with the way that the NFL and the NFLPA are working through this? And considering the length of time that we've had between, you know, when the COVID-19 outbreak began and the fact that we're now on the cusp of starting these training camps, is it surprising to you at all that this close there are so many outstanding questions still to be answered?
No, I'm not surprised. I actually think this has been a, now it's going to sound counterintuitive and crazy, but it's been a constructive and quick process. And I know they've had the benefit of time, but first of all, it's deadline league, and these people react very well to deadlines and better things happen. But you got to understand, there were so many issues. You know, you've gone from, it's July, you know, we're in the July 20s now, but you've already gone from four preseason games to zero preseason games. It's never happened before. So to go into the summer, to go into training camp, knowing that there were going to be zero preseason games, that happened fast overall, because, you know, the COVID situation changed over time. In the last 2 months, I remember talking to the union and to the NFL PR people, you know, I'm involved in access issues for writers, and we're trying to get our protocols set, trying to get the numbers of how many writers are going to be covered in practice. And at that time, things were getting much better. And I'll never forget the day after we spoke to union people about how we wanted to be able to have some people cover practice, perhaps more than they expected. The day after, a handful of Texans and Cowboys players, including Ezekiel Elliott, tested positive for COVID. That was the day after, and it got worse from then on. Then you had this, you know, disturbing spike in cases in the South, in the Southwest, and in the West, in California. So it changed on a dime. So we're at a different reality in terms of the virus than we were just 2 months ago. So, you know, now we're at zero preseason games. They weren't thinking about maybe two preseason games they were talking about a couple of months ago. Now we're at zero. Well, that happens pretty fast when you think about it.
Well, that's actually a good point, because the information, the situation changes week to week, almost day to day. And none of us have ever, you know, none of us have ever gone through this before. There's no easy answers. So that's actually a really good point, that it has to be fluid as the information changes.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely correct, Ed. And look, you can argue that they should have had this stuff decided, but man, the reality of the situation changed by the day, sometimes by the hour, and they had to react accordingly. You know, they went into the situation without a quote unquote bubble type situation like the NBA, like the NHL. So that became a little bit more complicated, because players are in everyday life now, as opposed to basketball players who are basically sequestered in Orlando, and the hockey players will be sequestered in Canada for the resumption of their seasons. So very complicated process, Ed, extremely detailed in every way, every move that a player makes and a coach makes inside training camp has to be choreographed in such a way that they can try to coexist despite this virus being out there, which is so prevalent. So very, very complicated. I can't begin to tell you how detailed it is, and it's, you know, mind-boggling.
And are you – I know that I am fully in agreement with no preseason games in the current circumstance. I do feel sort of badly for some of the end of the roster guys who aren't going to get an opportunity to play in these games. And also, you know, we've heard news that it looks like teams are going to go to 80-man rosters instead of 90. So there's going to be some guys who don't even get to come to camp. But are you in agreement with the no preseason game decision?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's the best thing they could have done. Look, colleges have never had a preseason. They have scrimmages, and they do just fine. Is the quality of play going to be rough as a result of no preseason games? Yes. But, man, we've seen over time the gradual reduction of time that players play, that starters play in the preseason, to the point where the Rams, none of the Rams starters played a second in the preseason last year. And I just think it would have been foolish to really try to get these preseason games going in any form this year because of the situation that's going on. Just get the players in the best shape they can be, and then go from there and start the season. I am completely in agreement with no preseason.
Yeah, I look at it. You talked about quality of play, Bob, and I look at it another way. If you don't have the preseason games, especially in the current environment, you have a better opportunity to get more players to the regular season healthy, and also you have the opportunity to get more players to the regular season without having been injured. So you might have better rosters at the beginning of the regular season, you know, without going through the preseason games.
That's a good point too. I mean, so much energy is spent by coaches trying to protect and avoid injury to their key players. And that's why the playing time is limited in preseason. So that's a very good point, and I think you're right. You will see healthier rosters. Now, the thing to watch is the players are concerned about those soft tissue injuries, the non-contact injuries, which happens when you go from a period of, you know, you're going 0-60 here in terms of football, and it can be treacherous. So I think they will be on paper and in theory healthier going into the season. Then once they start, you know, those regular season games, you're really going 100 miles an hour. And that's, you know, I hope the injury rate doesn't spike. But, you know, you have to expect that there will be some increases in injury.
So we know, I mentioned the 80-man roster limits. I don't know if that's been fully decided yet. I know that opt-outs are still under discussion. Just fill us in a little bit on what your understanding is at this point of some of the issues that remain, you know, before we actually get going. And I know a lot of those are financial.
Yes. I think the remaining issues are financial. And honestly, Ed, I think most of the big, you know, the NFL has very specific guidelines on if a player does not want to play in the season because of coronavirus concerns, they can opt out. They will get a stipend. They will get medical benefits for the year. So I think the heavy lifting in terms of the negotiations has been done. There will be some I's that need to be dotted and T's that need to be crossed, but I think we're at a point now where we're going to begin to see players report and teams kind of get in that situation where they can actually do football-related stuff once they get past the testing protocol that will allow the players into the building.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, the whole testing protocol, I think it's two negative tests before players are actually allowed into the building, correct?
Correct. And then, yes. And then there's a period between those tests they have to spend quarantined. So again, just to get inside the building on a regular basis is going to be a time-consuming thing. You know, we talked before about the access that we get as writers to watch practice. Well, we're not going to watch a regular football practice until the middle or toward the end of August, because that's, you know, that the time between now and then will be spent getting the players into the building, which requires testing, and then getting the players in condition. And that's very few, if any. There's going to be no football drills. This is going to be a physical conditioning program to get them up to speed physically so they can begin to have football-related drills.
The last I saw, Bob, I wasn't sure that the actual quote-unquote ramp-up period had been agreed to. Do we know what that ramp-up period is going to be yet?
No, that's a good point. I don't know that the specifics, like every single thing about that, that there are general parameters of how long those periods will be. So we're looking at, you know, and again, we're looking at, in theory and in the big picture, toward the end of August or the middle part of August would be when they start football-related drills. So, again, I don't know that the exact dates have been determined on that, but we're certainly getting close, and I think we're just a matter of time before the exact parameters are issued, and then the players can begin the process of reporting, being at camp, and then getting into shape, and then ultimately playing football within, say, a month.
All right, Bob, I want to take a quick break here for a word from our SB Nation sponsors. Then when I come back, there are a couple of Giants-related questions, a couple of other things that I want to get to. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. All right, Giants fans, we're back here on the Valentine's Views podcast, and we're talking to Newsday NFL columnist Bob Glauber about the opening of the NFL season in the COVID-19 pandemic era and all of the protocols and things that go along with that. Bob, I want to change gears just a little bit here. I want to talk about the Giants and maybe actually a little bit about, you know, something that you and the Professional Football Writers Association has been working hard on, which is media access. But let's talk a little bit about the Giants first. And I look at this whole situation, and you've been covering the NFL, you know, for a long time now, and I look at a 38-year-old head coach, first-time head coach that the Giants have. And I simply can't imagine a more difficult circumstance for a rookie head coach to walk in and try to get a team ready than the one Joe Judge faces this year. Can you think of anything comparable or anything, you know, more difficult than what he's got to go through here in your experience?
No. I mean, I say that because he's dealing with not only first-time head coach, first-year head coach, never a head coach at any level before. But he's dealing with something we haven't seen in a century in this country, and that's the pandemic. Throw in the convulsive events after the death of George Floyd, And this is a perfect storm of difficulty for any coach, no less a guy who has never been a coach. Joe Judge has his work cut out for him. I contend that, you know, this is, he gets a pass for this year, in essence, because no matter what happens, it's going to be difficult. And now, if he exceeds expectations, if somehow the team gets through the season and the league gets through the season, and they come out 8-8, man, this guy would be, you'd be potential coach of the year. I find him to be a very deep thinker. I think he is a, you know, despite being only 38, he's a more complete coach than his age would suggest and his inexperience would suggest, only because he's been around so many great coaches in his life. It doesn't mean he's going to be good, but he's been around Bill Belichick, Nick Saban, Sylvester Croom at Mississippi State. He talks about, you know, the impact of him on his life and his coaching experience. So he's been around really good football people. And I think he can take those experiences and use them to adapt to his own personality. I don't think he's going to run into that, well, I got to be what Belichick is, I got to be what Nick Saban is, what would they do in these services? He knows who he is. So he's a grounded guy, and I think he's got a pretty good chance to be a decent coach.
Bob, one of the things that you mentioned was that it's really difficult entering this season to judge what the Giants do or what they are. Did they make progress? We don't even know how many games are actually going to get played. And I have said multiple times throughout the offseason that I really think that when you look back on the 2020 season, you know, however it takes form, that I really think that there are two key questions for the Giants that maybe you'll want to look back on. Do they have the right head coach? Do they have the right long-term quarterback, regardless of what the record is or how the season plays out, how many games get played? I look at it and I think those are the two critical questions that you really want to come out of the season having answers for.
Well, Ed, when you reduce football to its most essential elements, those are the two things that you always have to look at. It's a league of coaches and quarterbacks, and it's really become more so over time. Any great team has a great coach and almost always has a great quarterback. Sure, there are some exceptions. You know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and under John Gruden and with Brad Johnson. You know, the Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl with a legendary defense in Baltimore. But by and large, championships are won by great coaches who have great quarterbacks. And we just don't know the answers to that with Joe Judge and Daniel Jones. But we're gonna get, you know, closer to finding out whether that's the case. But that's something that will happen over a period of years. I mean, we're not going to, even this year, no matter what happens, we're still going to say, okay, you know, where do these guys stand and how good can they be and how much better can the team around them be to determine the kind of overall long-term future of this team.
All right, Bob, last thing for you, something near and dear to my heart, something I know that you and the PFWA have been working on incredibly hard in conjunction with the league. I just want to touch on media access a little bit, and I want to do that for the simple reason that my listeners, you know, readers of Big Blue View, your readers at Newsday, readers of all of the other, you know, fine folks that cover the Giants on a regular basis are used to a certain form of coverage, a certain volume of coverage, certain types of stories that come out of training camp and out of you covering the team on a day-to-day basis. And just to sort of set the table for people who are following this team on a daily basis, just explain to our listeners a little bit about how different media access, you know, for us who try to cover these teams, how different media access is actually going to be.
Well, it's something we've never seen before, and for obvious reasons. You know, the players need to be protected, and that entails us not interacting with them in person at all. I think for the entire season, we will not be person, you know, face to face with NFL players. And that makes it tremendously challenging for us to cover it because, you know, people don't care and they shouldn't care about what we have to go through to get stories. But the fact is, you know, the better stories and you get to know your players better by, you know, reading stories that we are able to kind of craft that need information and need relationships with the players to happen. So those interactions are going to be very difficult. I mean, you won't get many individual interactions. You're going to get a lot of group Zoom chats and such. So, you know, people will see what the players have to say, but you kind of won't get that in-depth and added that color to what a player is like and what a player is going through. So, you know, the reader might not get that huge a difference in what he or she is reading in terms of, you know, it's football, it's what they're going through, it's that kind of thing. But, you know, there's a level of detail that I think is valuable when you have these personal interactions. And, that, you know, that's gone really for the foreseeable future. And I worry for my colleagues who are, you know, who have a lot of years left in covering football and sports. How are pro sports going to look moving forward? Because, you know, this thing is not going to disappear overnight. And it's going to be a real challenge. But, you know, obviously it's the least of anyone's worries. It's not like, you know, we have to take risks in talking to players on a Zoom call. But it does make it a different experience. And you're going to have to do a little bit more to stand out in your writing and in your presentation of what it's like for the players and for the coaches and for the team.
Bob, it's a different year. It's a difficult year. Let's just hope that as many players as possible, you know, and team officials and coaches and all of that who we forget about, who are actually the older, you know, people on the spectrum and the folks who are probably more at risk. Let's hope as many as possible stay healthy. Let's hope that we have as much football this season as we can possibly get. I thank you for spending some time with me. Why don't you just tell folks where they can find your work on Twitter and how they can interact with you and all that good stuff.
Sure. Well, I'm on Twitter at Bob Glauber, BobGlauber, and work for Newsday.com. And yeah. Come on to Twitter. And let's talk.
That's pretty straightforward, Bob. We always love talking to you, and hopefully the next time we do this, we'll be able to talk straight football.
You got it. Let's hope, Ed. Let's hope that time comes. Stay safe, my friend.
You too. All right, Giants fans, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye bye now.